How are we going to end these episodes?
Just play the Scottish National Anthem out and the Welsh National Anthem out. Which I'll find.
I know the words to both of those, so.
There you go. You get producer Bryn singing us out.
Everybody, and welcome back to another wonderful episode of Somewhere in Between. My name's Anthony, and I'm back with Mira, Johannes, and Hatim. Thanks for joining us. Hi, guys, how are you doing?
Hi.
Hello.
So, for this week's episode, we are again reaching outside of our little London bubble that we have between the four of us and speaking to some AITs from across the UK. This week we are in Wales, where we're going to be talking to Sarah and Nicole, who are, Sarah is an ST3, Nicole's an ST2, and they're going to be sharing some of their experiences. They caught up with Johannes and Mira earlier this week for a conversation, so we'll hear from them now.
Hello everyone, so Johannes and I, Johannes is here by the way, it's not just me talking.
Hey.
We are joined today for this segment with Sarah and Nicole, who are our Welsh reps on the AIT National Committee. Hi guys.
Hello. Hi.
And we just wanted to hear a bit more of the voices from our regional teams and the people representing those trainees in those areas. We've already spoken to Katerina earlier, who is the rep from Scotland, but I thought we'd take a different flavour today and find out what's going on over in Wales. So Sarah, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you ended up in GP training and as a rep.
Oh gosh, okay. Yeah, I did a degree in Bath and then worked in a company called Finance Wales, and then decided I wanted to do medicine, and then went to Swansea, and that was really good. I have to say that was a really, really good course, postgrad course in Swansea. Met best friends of my life who I've got around me, and and then GP. I think I'd always liked the idea of GP. I was torn between paediatrics and GP, to be honest, like really, really torn. And then I applied for both of them and, I had children and decided that GP was, I thought it was more family friendly, which it definitely is, but I think it's hard in a different way, isn't it? But, but I think it's nice seeing the patient holistically in GP. So,
Yeah, absolutely. And Sarah, you're currently an ST3 and a less than full-time trainee, is that right?
I am, yeah. I'm 60%, yeah.
Perfect. And I think that's something we'll probably dip into later on in the episode. And Nicole, tell us about yourself.
Yeah, so obviously I'm Welsh trainee. I'm from Wales. It's not much getting away from the accent. So yeah, I trained in Cardiff Med School and went straight through, really enjoyed my time there. And when I was in, I think it was my fourth year in uni, I helped set up the Cardiff Uni GP Society, which is now absolutely thriving and it's doing really well with hundreds of members, so that's great. And since then, I've always really been involved in the faculty, so kind of always wanted to be a GP, but being involved in the faculty really kind of cemented it for me. I then went and did my F1 and F2 training in the Gwent scheme. So kind of have a mix between Abergavenny, which is a bit of a smaller town, and then the bigger Newport. I went straight into GP training from there. So it's quite a simple, of course, boring ride. But yeah, I always knew I wanted to be a GP.
I don't think any of us would say that's boring at all. And it's, you know, you can clearly see your passion straight through from medical school. It's great to know kind of what you want to do and be able to do it. And I think Johannes will agree with me. It's very nice to have a regional accent on our podcast, isn't it?
Yeah, I feel like we've ticked the box.
Yeah. we've had a Northern Irish accent from our Scottish rep so far, and a first five GP who's from Newcastle. So we're slowly going to get round from everywhere. And Nicole, you're an ST2 currently, is that right?
ST2 full time, and I'm currently revising for the AKT.
Okay. And Sarah, you're preparing for the next session of RCA?
I'm sort of in it now because we got access to it this week. So to the 14Fish platform. So I've started using that this week, which is, it's been good to get my hands on it. It's been good to use it because I felt quite anxious that I didn't really know how it worked, you know? So actually it's really, really good. Like it's really user-friendly. Few things but that are an issue, which I'm sure everyone has felt, but everything's adapting so quick, isn't it? You know, everything is going at lightning speed and nobody's used to the speed of things. So I think we've just got to sort of hit that roller coaster with a crash helmet on and hope for the best.
Absolutely. And I think that that's a thing that lots of people have said is that COVID-19 and 2020 has brought on so much uncertainty for everybody and trying to adapt to the best of these situations. And I think AIT trainees are no different than everybody else. They have been really sort of adapting as best as they can, using new technology, getting used to new exams, probably changing family circumstances if family members have had to be furloughed or whatever else is going on with that landscape, whilst also, you know, managing training and seeing patients. So I think, you know, we've got a lot to be proud of, and probably there's a lot more that we want to work on to make better for trainees in the future as well, I guess. I suppose one of the things that I'm really interested from being a trainee in England and in London is to hear about the Welsh experience. You both represent slightly different kinds of areas in Wales, don't you? So Nicole, whereabouts are you based at the minute?
So I'm based at the minute in South Powys. So both, well, the practice I'm in at the moment and when I'm going to an ST3 are both rural practices. So kind of our demographics, so to speak, are the farmers who will always present late. And the practice I'm going to tends to do a lot of minor surgeries and enhanced services, which is great for training because you really get stuck in there and develop skills that you might have touched upon in previous specialities. So yeah, it's very different, but I did my hospital placement in the Gwent, which is obviously a city. So going between the two is really interesting, kind of learning the full speed A&E experience and then transferring that to a rural area where things are slightly different and you get the odd presentation of things like off and it's a bit different. But yeah, I've loved it. I love kind of working in a rural area and working in such a beautiful area is so good for well-being when there's so much going on in the world. I mean, just looking out the window and seeing a sheep.
Living in such a rural area, do you feel connected to GP in general and to GPs in the rest of the UK? Do you feel like you're part of that community?
Yeah, so that's one thing that, I mean, is definitely great with the Wales Train Scheme and the Welsh RCGP is we've got really close connections with Meyer and Peter, who are the chairs, obviously, of RCGP Wales. And we've got really close relationship. I'm able to email or text them and they get back to me in a few minutes, half the time, and when, obviously, everyone's kicking off exams, me and Sarah, we're emailing them and ringing them quite frequently. So yeah, so from the RCGP point of view, it's a really friendly cohort. And I mean, as well, shout out, friendly breed. Anyway, we tend to tend to be really friendly and open to get to know everyone. But I mean, I don't feel that I'm in a rural area that I'm isolated. In fact, I feel like I'm more connected because Powys is smack bang in the middle and some of the GPs belong to the West Wales RCGP and some of them belong to the South. And I've got contacts, you know, from all over Wales because we're a friendly bunch and we like to get involved.
And I think, you know, that there is something to be said about that. I am originally from the Northwest, from a really small village, and there is something about community spirit. And I think you get that when you work in smaller district general hospitals and smaller practices and moving to London. I mean, I would love to look outside and see sheep, but I think something would have gone drastically wrong in the middle of French period if that was the case. It would be great though. And I think Johannes and I have discussed this before. I think London is a very busy, thriving metropolis, of course, but also can be quite isolating if, you know, you don't have means of transport, especially now with COVID-19, if you're from one place to another. Lots of people have just sort of been stuck in their houses, if they've been shielding trainees and having various other experiences. So it's really nice to hear that you can go outside and breathe the fresh air and sort of have that mix of experiences. How about you, Sarah? What about where you're based? What's that like?
So I'm in Bridgend, which is sort of rural-y. I mean, most of Wales is fairly rural, really. You've probably got Cardiff, Newport, and then Swansea, and everywhere else has lots of hills and sheep and things like that. so yeah, it's a slightly deprived area, that area. So you do get quite a lot of pathology there, which, you know, and same as Nicole presenting late, but you know, that's just the demographic really. But yeah, I live in Cardiff, so, you know, I sort of commute there, which is amazing. You know, I'm there in like 25 minutes. And everyone's, you know, the local hospital I've worked in as well, obviously, because in the scheme, and you know, that's a great hospital, Princess of Wales. And again, you just sort of get to know everybody. And I did my training in Abergavenny, and then same as Nicole, I was in the Gwent as well. And the Gwent's a very big hospital, probably not compared to hospitals in London, but you know, you do feel a little, you do stay in your group a bit more, whereas I think when you're in a district general, you do sort of attempt to talk to other people. But it's just, you know, that's the same everywhere, isn't it? But yeah, no, I like Cambridge End. I think it's nice.
Yeah, and not that I'm biased or anything, but all the way through my training, even during CMT, I've always found the GP trainees to be the most approachable and friendly ones. So because you always know in any random posting that you may end up on, there will be some GPSHO who is there for that experience and is always for a good chat and to find things out. So that's always been nice. And I guess from working in a smaller area perspective, Johannes, you did your foundation training down in Cornwall, didn't you? So that's a different experience.
Yeah, so I was experimenting a little bit. I was thinking about ending up in a rural setting, so I thought I'd get a bit of a flavour. So my GP placement in F2 was in a clinic, essentially on a beach. And so to get to my home visits, I'd walk across the beach, which was amazing. But Cornwall's really kind of out on a limb, and I found it a little bit difficult not being able to travel out easily. But I mean, Nicole, are most of your social connections near to where you're working, or do you find that do you move out of area a lot?
So I live in Monmouthshire, so I travel in and out of Powys, and I'm from the valleys. So no, I don't feel isolating. I feel like, I mean, I'm able to travel out of Powys, and I mean, even from where I work to Cardiff, which is obviously the city centre, is probably about an hour and a half. So again, that's something good about Wales.
Yeah.
It's a smaller country, so obviously we've got good, kind of, you can jump straight on the M4 or the A roads quite quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. And not to get too political, you have your own sort of laws around COVID and travel and various other things. So it's about keeping up to date for your own set of patients, I'm sure, which I guess brings us to the big C in the room, the COVID-19. We have been hearing from trainees sort of their experiences around the country. I guess what I would be interested in is working in rural and rural-ish areas. How has that impacted, or how would you say COVID-19 has changed the way you guys work? If I went to Sarah first.
Well, same as everybody, we went straight to telephone consultations, like literally overnight. Doors were locked and that was it. We had, so the practice had an outdoor area. Well, it was a sort of store area that they converted into, well, they put a roof on it to see patients with, you know, who had symptoms, who you want to see, because we didn't go into hubs. So I know a lot of people went into hubs. So my practice in the cluster that we're in, so they have clusters in Wales of GP practices, and our cluster didn't go into a hub. So we were seeing COVID patients and then if we had to see patients without COVID symptoms. But at the beginning, that was very, very few. And then as I'm sure with you guys, everything increased. I would say, and again, I don't live in England. I'm sure it's the same in closed communities. I think because particularly in the area I was, there's a lot of family members who, you know, many generations of families who live in the same area. And so to suddenly, you know, have not be able to see each other, not have those connections, I think that was mentally very hard for people. Staff who couldn't see their grandchildren and, you know, and that was really hard, you know. So I suppose that's the same as everywhere, really. I think it's just adapting and getting used to that. And initially it was really quiet, and then it ramped up, and now it's kind of, it's gone from thinking telephone consultation is like fantastic to now I'm like, I don't like it anymore. and I want it to go away.
I think that's it. A lot of people have said half of the time I feel really productive because I can get through lots of different calls, yeah. But then the other half of the time it feels like a lot of work is being duplicated, or you can't actually get off the phone.
You cannot get off the phone. It's quite a skill.
Who love to have a good chat, and if they've not spoken to people in a long time, I think that's probably an issue as well. And Nicole, would you say echo the same sort of experience, or anything slightly different for you?
Yeah, so I'd say pretty much the same in our practice, actually. My practice didn't go into hubs either. There was a lot of kind of uncertainty about whether we'd been moved back into hospital post being an ST2. Mm-hmm. But that didn't happen to me. But I know some of the other ST2s were moved from hospital post to cover A&E and things. But yeah, mostly a positive experience, actually, with a telephone triage and telephone consults. And we have got the option of doing video calls and patients sending in thoughts as well. So that's been really useful. And I think, I mean, it is different. And it's not what I think you go into GP hoping to do. But I mean, I do feel that we will learn skills from this, and I mean, learn different things that we might not have touched upon until later in our training, maybe, or maybe later in our career. So yeah, I think it's a mixed bag. I'm trying to take a positive from it.
I was just going to say, at the beginning, I don't know if it was the whole overall pandemic or things, I found myself really doubting actually whether it was going to be the right job for me, because I found that complete cut off from seeing patients and being able to sort of judge how well they were walking through the door and having those relationships and, you know, and knowing people should be seen, but they were too scared to come down. And thought, oh, I just don't know if I can, I wasn't getting any sort of satisfaction from that at all. Felt I was even helping or doing a good job or anything. So I'm pleased that things have slowly changed. And also I can see the benefit of the telephone consultation massively, particularly for working people, you know, particularly dermatology. Like, it's amazing, people sending photos and of stuff is just, it's so good to be able to do that and to be able to send that straight on to dermatology. And, you know, so that's good. But I think it's, as everyone I'm sure agrees, it's the elderly patients, it's the vulnerable patients, it's the patients who can't use their mobile phone that I worry about.
Absolutely. I think there has also been this sense of COVID-19 has been a big sort of, if you will, explosion in general practice and all across sort of medicine, in a sense, because we've had to reshape exactly how we're going to work, and we don't know how long it's going to last for. So, and that's the other issue, making sure that your elderly patients are safe, children with safe chronic things are looked after, and a whole host and multitude of things that aren't just physical health related. You know, we are seeing, as you mentioned, a lot of mental health and also problems that will arise, crop up due to poverty and various other factors that have a huge impact as a result of COVID and the financial implications of that and what it means on our patients' lives. I think it's interesting that you said, you know, you doubted whether this was for you. And I think probably a lot of people went through a similar sort of thing, regardless of where they were posted in maybe GP training and other things. Because you're right, it's not what we signed up for. It's a very unexpected way to feel. But hopefully we are sort of thriving from that and learning better ways to look after our patients. But I completely see what you mean in terms of that there being a bit of a worry in the back of your mind. Did you guys, Johannes, Nicole, did you feel sort of similar doubts or anxiety at all with all this going on?
Yeah, definitely. I found kind of the balancing of risk and whether you do want to bring a patient in to see them, but then potentially bring them out to their house and expose them to saying, well, okay, we can manage this without seeing you. And I found that, I still am finding that quite difficult. And even the uncertainty kind of in yourself and your own family, and knowing that you're going to work and then having to come home, I mean, around your family members, I have found that difficult.
And how about you, Sarah? You mentioned you have children as well. How has that been? Are they schooling from home and all of that?
I mean, what schooling from home? I don't know. Well, you know, I've tried doing a bit. I'm not a teacher, so I try doing a bit, but I get too frustrated with them. I'm like, why can't you just read? So my patience was tested. No, that my children are quite young, so you know, the importance of things, you know, maybe my middle one, who's five, like trying to, my concern was that she's losing out learning to read and write. So my older one can and my middle one can't. And the three-year-old's not, I'm not so bothered about that. But yeah, no, it was stressful. You know, we debated whether the children should move to live with my mother, who lives in Pembrokeshire. So that was quite an emotional discussion, and we decided not to go for that. But you know, lots of things like that. And my youngest one was she was premature, so it was trying to find out where at the beginning, you know, because where she sort of was in terms of risk wise. So and it was fine, and the pediatrician said that she, you know, she was at normal risk. So, but it was sort of working through that kind of thing, and it was just all unknown. And everyone, I had a few partners in my practice went down with it as well, so it was sort of just making sure, you know, that I sort of changed before going home and dumped the clothes outside, sprayed Dettol over everything, you know, went in, had a shower. So my hands have never been so clean. You know, yeah, so it's yeah.
Yeah, and it, you know, and that there's just a highlight of the implications it has, isn't it? It's just not our day-to-day, what we do for work, because that's what we chose to do. But, you know, living with family or having children, all of that has a big impact. How about you, Johannes? How would you say this? Any doubts or anxieties? I know Johannes from training with him, and he's one of the most level-headed guys that I know. But I'll be interested to hear his answer.
I feel like we probably need a separate episode to discuss my doubts about DP. But no, I think in general it hasn't affected me, mainly because I kind of plan to have a bit of a portfolio career with a little bit of everything. So I think no matter what GP is and what it becomes, I'll always have a few other strings in my bow that I'll use to kind of hedge the risks. But no, I'm happy enough at the moment.
I mean, as expected, a very shrewd answer from Johannes. But no, I agree. I think everyone has sort of reacted a bit differently. And it's really interesting, Sarah, you mentioned about the risk assessment initially of whether people are safe or shielding or not, because I'm sure all of us got inundated with calls from patients who had queries of, am I okay? Or can I still work? Or what can I do? And actually, as trainees ourselves, there wasn't much guidance right at the beginning. No. And as a trainee, I actually got redeployed from a hospital job back to primary care due to health reasons. And again, that was working with lots of training program directors and getting good support and using various websites and resources, because it just wasn't there. But I will say a really positive thing that has come as a result of that is hospitals are really looking at their risk assessments now, because they were aware that COVID-19 and this sort of thing is here to stay. It's going to affect, you know, training, regardless of what stage or level of career you're at, you know, from consultants all the way right down to medical students who have started working without even really getting that chance to finish. And I think it has an impact on us all. So it's about being there and supporting each other and recognizing all of that, which I suppose kind of is a segue and brings nicely round to that sense of community, which you guys are talking very nicely about in terms of working in Wales and having a community with your patients and colleagues and things like that. I guess from RCGP Wales and faculty's perspective, how have you found getting onto that and experiencing being a rep? How have you found that experience?
Me and Sarah kind of, we started just as COVID was kicking off. So Sarah and I had never even met. We had, I think, an email between the two of us, and then we had an induction over, I think it was Skype or Microsoft Teams or...
We haven't actually met in real life yet, have we?
No, but we do text and phone an awful lot. Yeah. So we just really hit the ground running, actually, with Ozzy. I've been involved in a faculty before, but not as the Wales rep. So yeah, we hit the ground running, and it was COVID and needing to make connections very quickly and get kind of our names out very quickly. And I think we've done that, haven't we, Sarah?
Yeah, definitely. I think myself and Nicole, you know, I think we've worked really well as a team, and it's been really nice to have sort of the two of us together. And we come from slightly different places of training, you know, as Nicole's at ST2 doing AKT and I'm an ST3 doing CSA. So we've been able to cover both those bases and those sort of points of view. And, you know, I think, like Nicole said, we hit the ground running, and literally it was like, right, this and this, and trying to sort of work out what was going on and let, you know, RCG pay. Wales though, and like Nicole said, Myra and Peter have been very accessible and very responsive to things that we've suggested. And so I think as a rep, it's been a really interesting experience, and myself and Nicole are trying to sort of improve our representation in Wales as well, and we're trying to sort of make trainees a bit more aware that we're here and we can help them and things like that. So because I'm not sure how, you know, I'm sure some people are aware of the AIT reps, but I think we probably need to increase our profile, I think, definitely. And myself and Nicole have worked really hard towards that.
I mean, absolutely. And this podcast hopefully is a forum where we've got some Welsh trainees listening. And if trainees who are listening from Wales do want to get involved and contact you guys, is there a Twitter page, or is it on part of the RCGP Welsh website? How will it work for people who are interested?
It's on the Welsh RCGP website, isn't it? And also there's a Facebook group as well that we've recently gone on to, so which is the RCGP Wales one for, you know, generally. And then we've sort of popped up on there and said, hello. and we're trying to set up a meeting with other regional AITs at the moment as well. So those are probably ways they can contact us. Is there any other way, Nicole? I'm not sure.
I think we have had our email addresses sent out as well, haven't we?
Yeah.
So every AIT theoretically should have our contact details, and we're always accessible. We pick up our emails really frequently, and we aim to get back to people with answers or a way of means of them finding out further information. I know that the faculties are always happy for AITs come along to meetings as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things we've been sort of telling our peers and everything like that, if you're not sure about which faculty you belong to or anything, you're in a GP practice, ask the GPs that work there. More often than not, some of them will be part of that faculty and can lead you to it, or to your training program directors. I think faculties are a really good part of the RCGP GP to be a part of, because you are obviously aware and championing what's going on locally that matters to you and to your colleagues and your practices and populations, but you feed directly in looking at council papers and what may be happening affecting major central decisions as well. And I think, you know, feeding in from whenever you can, from being an AIT, there are medical student representatives, there's, you know, foundation year representatives at the RCGP. And I feel like as GP trainees, we also need to really push that voice. Yeah. As busy as we can be whilst prepping for exams and doing those jobs. But it's really good, useful to know. We can find maybe the RCGP Welsh link and the Facebook group, and we can put that in the description of the podcast. I think that's something.
Yeah, that'd be great.
So Bryn will do. He's taking note, probably. Johannes, was there anything else you wanted to ask our lovely ladies here from Wales today?
We did a previous podcast about technology, and I was just curious, with the more rural communities, how are they reacting to use of technology? And, you know, I've just got this stereotype picture of a Welsh farmer in my head who maybe doesn't have the time or the interest in getting involved in digital tech. How's your experience of that been?
Yeah, so I mean, it is more difficult. Not everyone has good internet access or a mobile phone with, I mean, a camera that will do a video. So it's a bit of a mixed bag. Some of them are willing to try, and you can kind of have them on the landline and then have a mobile in front of them and try and get things done that way. And other times, I mean, we've got to be accessible to everyone, haven't we? So if they can't do it, then we bring them in, and it's what's doing safest for the patient. Sometimes they have family friends or neighbours, or, I mean, younger members of the family will come in and take a photo if they've got a skin lesion, or will be there from a distance with a video. Kind of point. If it's ways and means, but I think you've got to be patient and realise that not everyone has got the same kind of technology brain as some of us younger people do.
Well, Sarah, is there any difference for you living in a slightly more metropolitan area?
It's quite funny to think of Cardiff as metropolitan. Cardiff's more like a friendly big town compared to proper cities. but it's a great place to live, I have to say. You always end up bumping into someone you know, and it's that situation. But same as Nicole, really. I think it's, some people love it. Most people are not super keen for video. I've had more people turn down video. They're really happy for telephone consultations, probably excessively happy, because I think they can definitely throw in other things that they need to, and there's no little cues that you can give that, you know, things might be ending. But so telephone consultations, people have adapted to really, really well. I would say it's the video ones. I've had people, when I've asked them, can I video you? They go, ooh, don't want to, or that it doesn't work, or you try it. So we use Accurate, because I don't know if you guys use that. So I found that really good. But they can't, when I'm explaining what they've got to do, they get really stressed out, or they get really, particularly if they're a bit older. I mean, I know that's massively stereotyping, but, you know, or just people with children who are, just don't have time. They just want to have a quick chat on the phone, you know? So I think it's quite mixed, really. I think some people love it and some people don't.
Yeah, and kind of related follow-up question is just about how you're coping with, I guess, relatively spread out communities, because in London you can pretty much do a home visit on foot, because our communities are quite tightly packed. So if you, I assume you've got much more spread out communities. How are you coping with things like home visits, or just managing people who are separated from each other?
I suppose it was like, how am I going to do a home visit? You know, as in like, okay, so I've got my PPE on. Do I put my PPE on before I leave? Do I put it on in the car? And then, you know, where do I, and then I think someone somewhere, I've seen a video of how you should do it. So I have like an orange bag in the boot of my car. And then I remember I put my gloves on and my visor and everything and went with going into a residential home, but I hadn't done it my apron. And then I couldn't actually do it with my glove. Anyway, it was just all ridiculous. But so I suppose logistics of, because I have to use my car, as I'm sure Nicole does every time, you know, I can't walk to a visit generally, so it's always driving somewhere. So and then it's deciding what you do from that point, really. So that's been challenging, is trying to get in a house in and out with the right sort of sanitizing of things and making sure that you don't then contaminate your car. And then, you know, so a little bit stressful. It was being a bit easier seeing people in the surgery, because you're more in control of that environment, you know.
Yeah.
And also, you know, I've had to do a few palliative care ones where I'm there with my visor on and my mask, and been really horrible, actually, in their houses, you know, just having to be so detached, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I had an interesting experience where I accidentally showed up at the wrong house in full PPE and absolutely terrified a 4-year-old girl. And when I showed up at the door, looking like an astronaut.
I know. That's the thing. You look so old, don't you, with the visor. Yeah. Everything. It is quite, I do find, like yesterday I was walking down the street trying to look for this number, and I was like, where is this house? And there were people, workmen, and I felt like really like I had, you know, like a giraffe on my head. Like I felt like people were staring at me because I looked so strange. But
Nicole, what about you?
So I haven't actually done any home visits in the practice I've been in, just because of the way the COVID has kind of changed things. I'm doing mostly the telephone calls. But I know that the partners and the salary GPs, I mean, it's the same as Sarah. They kind of weren't sure how they were going to do the full doffing and donning when they were so close to in someone's house. Like, do you do it before you leave? Do you do it before? It's difficult. So from a personal point of view, I haven't had much to do with that. But something that most, well, I know lots of rural places do have, is they have two surgeries. Patients are not always that far from one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I think it's interesting that you said, you know, learning about this donning and doffing. And I think even in hospital, people have had to adapt to what was going on. Certainly before I was redeployed and was put on a COVID ward, I was watching those videos. Oh, I can't tell you, countless times, absolutely petrified about what to do. And then to find that there was a shortage of masks wasn't reassuring. I didn't go in, don't worry. But it you're right, you know, it's one of those things, it's risk assessing how unwell your patient is, but also risk assessing for yourself and then the people that you're going to go home to later that evening. And I guess hopefully through time, as we've become more and more used to this, it's going to become a little bit more second nature, but it's absolutely not what any of us would have expected at all, I don't think. Mm-hmm. And I guess one of the things that we briefly mentioned but didn't really come onto is, I guess, with exams. So I know, Sarah, we talked about you trying to submit things for the RCA, and obviously it's probably difficult because many people may not want recordings of video consultations and things like that. In terms of being an ST3 about to sit this exam and knowing that that was coming for you, but also representing other ST3s who had lots of questions. How did you find juggling both of those roles? Was that quite difficult to do?
I think it was fine, actually. I think it was just kind of because it was just I have to say the RCGP Wales was very responsive. So we really felt like any queries we had were answered. And even now ongoing, because it's, you know, there are still things to iron out, aren't there? Because it's so new. So you know, we're definitely getting good responses back and trying to make sure that we represent things. I think being a less than full-time trainee, I can come from that point of view. And I also, you know, I was 20 hours away from sitting my CSA and it got cancelled. So,
oh gosh.
Yeah, I can understand people who were in that position, how hard that's been. And, you know, and, but it's fine. It's just, I think it's just trying to make sure that you sort of highlight things that maybe haven't been picked up and, you know, but in a healthy way, you know, in a kind of like, you know, has anyone sort of thought about this, you know, and then, like I said, the responses we get back have been really, really helpful. And I have to say that I've really felt, and I'm sure, I don't want to speak for Nicole, but I think she feels the same, but I really felt like the trainees have been, you know, really thoughtful by RCGP Wales, but in particular, because that's who I deal with, but I'm sure RCGP overall as well, you know, I do feel like they have been very aware of the massive impact on us. One thing, if you don't mind, I just want to touch back briefly on was just when Nicole mentioned about risk. And I think, I wonder if that's something that there needs to be a little bit more focus on, mm-hmm. is risk management for registrars, because I think that's a really tough one to sort of come into and deal with. And we don't really have any very much experience of that in hospital, particularly because obviously it's very senior led, you're in a team, whereas you're much more on your own in GP practice. And I think I've had amazing support in my practice, very, very accessible trainers, but I've still felt that pressure of making that decision of not bringing someone in or bringing them in. And I think that's, I don't know if eventually there'll be more resources. You can't predict risk, I suppose. So it's trying to help people in some way with regards to that. I don't know.
No, I completely agree with you. I think it was a bit of a shock for everyone that we kind of ended up in this lockdown state. I mean, it probably shouldn't have been, but that we got into this state of being locked down and the implications it meant on our the ways in which we practice. In terms of talking about resources, yeah, I agree with you. I think it is a strange world to be out there. And if you're an ST1 that hasn't done any general practice at all and about to embark on it now, it's completely different to what you were anticipating at all. And I do, you know, actually having some resources would be helpful. The RCGP do have a COVID-19 resource hub with some really, you know, useful practical things, predominantly you know, about how to get the best out of video consultation. Consultations and things like that. But I agree. I think there is a big scope for there to be more resources and even hearing from trainees about things that help them and other things that they may have used that have helped them during this time about, you know, assessing someone on the phone. Actually, this is a really good tool, or let's not do the, if they can count to 20 over the phone and assess breathlessness, because that's a terrible thing to do, which is all sort of raving about at the beginning. And I think it's learning about that, isn't it? Because I guess we're seeing so much evidence every day. We just go on Twitter and type in COVID and it's just, you know, absolutely bamboozled with stuff. But no, I completely hear what you're saying. Did you have any thoughts on sort of that from that perspective, Nicole?
I think the same. It would be kind of, it's difficult, isn't it? We weren't aware that this was going to happen.
Yeah.
In advance to plan for it, so it's difficult to know. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's easy to say, isn't it, in hindsight, well, we need and what we need going forward, but. Yeah, I mean, I did use the COVID hub quite a lot with the shielding questions and I know they had a little ethics section up on there as well, which I found really useful. So yeah, if that could be developed and going forward, whether there'd be more resources, again, which will, show the community that, RCGP does care and does want to help out for the GPs.
Yeah, definitely. And from a ST2 about, you know, thinking about AKT and things, has that changed your perspective of how you would have approached it, do you think, in terms of COVID, non-COVID? Have your plans been changed as a result?
Yeah, so I had been booked for the April exam and obviously that was cancelled. And what I really struggled with was kind of the motivation to keep revising, not knowing if the exam was going to go ahead in the summer, if it was going to go ahead in the October. So yeah, I think it's been really difficult. And then having such uncertainty in work as well, and then coming home and having to revise, not knowing if your exam was going to go ahead, if it was going to be cancelled. I think I've heard that from lots of my my peers, just keeping that motivation up. And
definitely, and I can't even imagine, just, you know, looking a bit at a step behind that for medical students who were not in their final years, but in other years where exams just got cancelled or their years stopped, not near the end, or even GCSE and A-level students. You can't imagine working so hard to try and get your grades. Although I think
very hard.
Putting myself back into an 18-year-old shoes, I probably would have been thrilled not to have to do that.
I think we've all fantasized about that, just being passed through.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, for those whose predicted grades may not have been what they wanted, these exams were their chance for that. It is a bit of a shame. And I've said this before, I'm, you know, quite thankful that I'm not at university still at the moment, because if I had more years to go and had to do lots more online learning as opposed to face-to-face with your peers in lecture theatres and, you know, sessions, I don't know if that's a whole new world we're looking into. But I guess time will tell from that perspective.
There's definitely an expiry date on how exciting Zoom chats are. I think we're all kind of reaching the end of our Zoom chat enjoyment curve as well. So it'll be interesting to see how we manage to keep up kind of that online learning over the next few months.
Yeah, I think you're really right. I think it's kind of, I think this has highlighted to me actually how important interpersonal face-to-face interaction is. And even with my own family, you know, like you said, we'd do a quiz and then it was sort of like, we've got to do it. Really, like, it was just started to get really exhausting. And then I don't know why that is. I've read lots of articles about how all of this stuff is very exhausting. And I think you don't get much, well, you do get stuff back from it, but it's not as important as meeting people, and particularly for people going to learn stuff. That's so important.
No, I completely agree. And I think there's that, you know, we'll see in the dictionary next year, Zoom fatigue being fine, because that's how everyone feels. And, you know, there's only so much Disney trivia anyone can do anymore. And all of that. I think the one positive that I will say about the Zoom meetings and doing things online is I've actually felt over COVID much closer to other AIT reps because of our meetings that we, you know, we've been having more regularly, primarily because of the exam disruption and what we were going to do and what, you know, trainees in our areas were saying. But it was really interesting to hear and see all these faces that I hadn't actually ever seen before, because we can do meetings, but because we're so in such disparate areas, that often made it harder. So that's made a big difference, I think. And I think that's something that I guess I wouldn't have Zoom fatigue for in the future, but I agree with you. I think I'm up to the hilt with quizzes at the moment.
I think you're right, though. I think it's that balance, isn't it? It's like with everything, there's always yin and yang, isn't there? And I think, like, we were at a Wales, RCGP Wales meeting of the week, weren't we, all Wales? And they said they were like over 30 people, because it meant the people from North Wales didn't have to travel so they could do it. The people with children like myself, so I just sat in the bedroom and had to mute it when they were screaming at the door. But, you know, and it was done then. And I think that's where it comes into its own. It makes a lot more things more accessible to a wider variety of people, which I think overall will obviously be better, but just not everything.
No, absolutely. And I agree with you. From a professional perspective, it does work, but interpersonal skills, you're right. And, you know, I've been speaking to lots of patients who say now when they are being social, they're finding it really exhausting, because it's almost a sense of trying to learn to be social again. You spent so long sort of, you know, being on a FaceTime, watching a bit of Netflix and doing your own thing and working at home, and now having to think about the risk of traveling to X, Y, or Z, and how you're going to maintain distance between your friends and do all those things that aren't that natural to you. But it is interesting. And as borders are opening up, I don't know about you guys, I'm getting lots of queries from patients who want to go on holiday and whether I can do antibody tests for them. I can't, but you know, that sort of thing. I don't know if you've experienced something similar. Have patients been talking to you about traveling away, or is that not in their sights at all?
I've had a few queries.
I haven't had any. I don't know if that's just because Wales have only just lifted their restrictions, so whether people are getting their head around that. I find more people are more anxious about moving about at the moment. I haven't personally, but Nicole has, so.
Yeah, absolutely. And what about you, Johannes? Any jet setters in your practice?
I've had a couple of people asking for tests for countries where it's mandatory to have a negative COVID test. But obviously you can't do that through the NHS. So that's a bit of a tricky situation where people are having to go private. But not a huge amount. I think you're right, Sarah. I think there is there's definitely a split. There's a group of people who just want to get on holiday just in case there's a second wave and they want to, you know, get their virus out for a few days before they come back. Another whole people either because
oh, you're cutting out, Johannes. I can't hear what you're saying. He's going to come back all at once.
Frozen.
Sorry, he's given Bryn a good job to do.
I think it's Bryn's ghost telling me to stop talking.
No, that's fine. I mean, and I guess this would be a nice way to sort of wrap things up. It's been I really enjoyed talking to both of you, and I've said this a lot of times before on podcasts, but it's actually really refreshing to talk to people who have had different experiences, but we're all doing the same thing and have the same goal at the end of it all. Absolutely. Were there any sort of final thoughts you wanted to share on the podcast, or if to Welsh trainees that are listening, or anything in general?
I would just say, come to Wales. You'll love it. It's very friendly. There's lots of beaches. I don't surf, but lots of people do surf, and you know, lots of good surfing beaches. I would say to the Welsh AITs, you know, if you've got any concerns, just get in contact. We're, like Nicole said, we're really accessible. We'll move really quickly to help you, and we're really keen to do it. So
that's great. How about you, Nicole?
Yeah, just mirroring what Sarah said. I mean, we're here to help. That's what we're here for. And we like helping. We like to kind of get the buttons for you. And we like hearing how you're getting on. So, I mean, if there is anything we can help with, please, please, please do get in touch.
Well, that's great. I mean, I think Johannes and I just want to say thank you once again for taking the time to come and speak to us. We will put the links that sort of link up RCGP Wales and the faculties at the end of the podcast episode. And it was really nice speaking to you. Thanks, guys. Oh, bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Great. So another really amazing chat and some really interesting reflections. I think, you know, we spoke to Katerina from Scotland last week, and a lot of similar things cropped up around community. Obviously, the hot topic of exam changes and wider changes to training because of COVID. But yeah, really interesting to hear a different perspective, and loved hearing about kind of the differences between practicing in a rural area versus a more urban area, and the fact they've got to experience a bit of both of those during the training as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think Johannes and I got a sense of it's a completely different type of training, but also we made me certainly reflect on the kind of general practice experience I've had in London and what I thought it would be and what it actually has turned out to be. Because I think there is that, I guess, at least I had that preconception that depending on where you would be, everyone would be really posh or everyone would be really poor, or there'd be a lot of socioeconomic deprivation. But London is such a melting pot that there's actually no clear divide. And depending on where your general practice surgery is, sure, there may be more of a slant one way or another, but there is a real mix of everything you see. And it was really nice to hear that even in Wales, you can't really really completely expect what might be coming around the corner and who you might be dealing with. What do you think, Johannes?
Yeah, I think even though I kind of spent time in Wales when I was growing up, I think just having been in London for a while, you kind of imagine that London is urban and everything outside London is rural and everyone else is kind of like traveling to see their patients on a tractor or, you know, trekking across fields. And it's a very silly way to look at it, but it's just nice to kind of hear that, you know, you can get that full range of experiences, different communities and different types of patient populations. It made me think a little bit about where I want to be in the future, because I think as Katrin was saying last time, you know, she's gone through a much longer training pathway, and I think a lot of the GPs that I know have got similar kind of extended preludes to qualifying, and I think maybe at our age or our stage we're maybe thinking about, you know, moving outside of the bright city lights and choosing something that's a bit more chilled. My mind was flirting a little bit with the idea of moving somewhere. a little bit more rural.
Yeah, I was, because I had my annual leave in Wales a few weeks ago now, and it definitely was so nice to have a change of scenery and a change of pace. Definitely gave me some thoughts around, whether London is the forever home, but we'll see anyway. But yeah, definitely really nice to hear just how different it can be to practice in a different area while also having lots of the same similarities and the similar sense of community within the profession.
That's the biggest thing I took from it, I think, was that shared experiences, actually, that sort of... that they have to what we have, and I quite enjoyed that when they spoke about that quite a bit. But the biggest thing I wanted to say is also at the RCGB conference, the Wales stand is always the most fun because they always have the best goodies, and I thought that's very important.
So do you hear that, Wales? Good goodies stand. That's effectively what Hatem's taken away.
And obviously our main man, Bryn, our producer, is also from Wales. So another massive success from Wales there.
And he's going to be singing the national anthem on the way out.
That's something he's promised us. I don't know if he will deliver. But no, I totally agree with you. I think the other thing that it was nice to hear from this conversation is talking about difficult times, as you said, Ant, in terms of exams, but also with COVID. I know it feels like we always say COVID all the time, but it has been such a big part of our lives this year, of how that affected communities everywhere, even, you know, and in Wales, how what that meant in terms of distancing, what that meant in terms of people coming to the surgery, and also trying to motivate populations to still seek and access healthcare, because with or without COVID, they may have been reluctant to do so. And that doesn't change sort of our need or desire to help those people when we have to. And I think that's ever present, especially now with sort of, I guess, shall I say, whisperings of a potential second surge. I think it's something definitely in the forefront of all of our minds, but probably especially yours, Anne, as you're going into... being a real GP, I'm doing it in air quotes because you were already, but about what that will mean and the implications of starting your sort of first working year as a GP with a possible pending second surge and all of that. It really made me think, listening to sort of what we had talked about back.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I feel kind of grateful that I've been able to be a trainee during the first peak of the pandemic, because, you know, now we're all more or less adjusted to working remotely. We're just only going to increase our skills in that area. So being able to then take the next steps as a kind of fully qualified GP, I think, is a good thing to have been able to train through this, because even when we're completely post-COVID in the hopefully not too distant future, I'm sure that lots of the the best things of how we've been adapted to working over the last 6 months will remain. So being able to have developed that skill set in a more supervised, safe environment, I think is going to be a good thing. I think it would have been more difficult if you'd have just finished training, you know, like last August, and then fairly swiftly went into a very new way of working. So, so I think I feel ready for it. And I think probably a nice way to end is, I think you said something during the conversation, Mira, which definitely, you know, rang true and resonated with me, was that as GP trainees, we all have a lot to be proud of from the last year. You know, we've all adapted to huge changes in the way that we're training, huge changes to exams, huge changes to the way that we are dealing with patients, and lots of personal huge changes in regards to our families, friends, personal lives as well. So I think, you know, that is something that we should celebrate. Everyone, all GP trainees listening to this, do have a huge amount to be proud of. You guys have done incredible work over the last 6 months and are going to be doing more incredible work over the coming months as well, when hopefully if we do have a second peak, maybe hopefully it won't be as bad. But, you know, I think that's something that we do need to say and recognise the amazing job that you've all been doing. So it was nice to hear that in the conversation as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think sometimes as medics, we always focus on maybe the negatives or perhaps where we could have done better, or there's always another exam or more to do or more portfolio or new portfolio. We'll talk about that another episode. But definitely recognizing all the stuff that we've done and everything we've come through. So absolutely, congratulations to everyone who's sat the RCA. If you're starting new jobs this year, or whether you're, you know, just started ST1, 2 or 3. I think, yeah, maybe the theme of this episode is, you know, being grateful for how far we've come, but also to congratulate us for all our successes as well.
Definitely, yeah, 100%. So yeah, congrats guys, you're all amazing. You're all also amazing for listening to this podcast. Thank you again for tuning in, and we will see you again soon for another episode of Somewhere in Between. Bye
bye, bye. Cue Bryn singing.
I'm listening.
My voice.